What happens when the person responsible for upholding justice becomes its greatest threat? In the Florida Board on Judicial Conduct's cramped Tallahassee office, investigator Lacey Stoltz receives a mysterious call from a woman who will only identify herself as Margie. After 12 years of investigating mundane judicial misconduct cases, improper gifts, conflicts of interest, temperament issues, Lacey finds herself intrigued by this caller's insistence on meeting at Starbucks rather than her office. The woman who arrives moves with calculated precision, scanning the cafe before selecting a corner table. Her designer outfit and perfectly styled hair contrast with her obvious nervousness. She demonstrates an unnerving knowledge of Lacey's career and even points out the colleague Lacey positioned at another table as backup. This calculated revelation serves its purpose, establishing her thoroughness while suggesting she has more cards to play. At a dimly lit hotel bar, Margie reveals herself as Jerry Crosby, daughter of murdered law professor Brian Burke. For 22 years, Jerry has built a case against the killer. Now, Judge Ross Bannock, a respected Florida Circuit Court judge whose carefully crafted public persona masks what she believes is a methodical serial killer with at least 7 victims across multiple states. Professor Burke was beloved at Stetson Law School for his constitutional law lectures. Jerry's investigation pointed to a former student who had melted down after being challenged in class, Ross Bannock, who later became a judge in Florida's 22nd Judicial District. What's chilling is Bannock's pattern of stalking victims for years before striking. Each supposedly wronged him. Her father in class, a reporter exposing his questionable deal, a lawyer over fees. These murders span decades and jurisdictions, making connections difficult for authorities to detect. Obsession defines both sides. While Bannock tracks those who've wronged him, Jerry has sacrificed everything in her 20-year pursuit. She's documented each murder meticulously, noting the identical method, blunt head trauma followed by strangulation with marine-grade rope tied in a distinctive double clove hitch knot. When does righteous pursuit become dangerous fixation? This question haunts both Jerry and Lacey as they consider a case against one of Florida's most respected judges. Judge Ross Bannock represents the most terrifying kind of killer, one operating within the system designed to stop him. His position grants him respect, authority, and insider knowledge. By day, he's a respected judge known for punctuality and fairness, attending social functions with an elderly widow as his companion. He maintains a secret vault, a hidden room between businesses he owns with no official record, secured with advanced technology. This space houses surveillance equipment, self-destructing computers, and his murder kit. Bannock's technological expertise makes him exceptionally dangerous. Since youth, he's leveraged technology for control and revenge. His custom spyware Maggots allows anonymous access to Florida government networks, including the Board on Judicial Conduct's files. How do you catch someone monitoring the investigation targeting him? How do you build a case against someone who knows the legal system's weaknesses intimately? This nightmare confronts Lacey and Jerry. When Bannock discovers the investigation, he fabricates terminal cancer, takes leave, switches vehicles, creates false identities, and begins tracking Jerry, eventually kidnapping her and planning to eliminate both investigators. Lacey forms a task force with colleague Darren Trope and paralegal Sedell to investigate Jerry's case. They traveled to Biloxi, Mississippi and Marathon, Florida to explore murders potentially linked to Bannock. In Biloxi, they meet Sheriff Dale Black about house painter Lanny Verno's murder. Lacey tactfully presents their interest as stemming from an unrelated complaint, noting Verno had lived in Pensacola, information missing from the detective's files. She gains credibility by precisely describing the murder weapon. In Marathon, they investigate Parry Kroenke's murder, an 81-year-old retired lawyer strangled on his fishing boat. Police Chief Turnbull becomes cooperative when Lacey accurately describes the distinctive rope used. These meetings reveal a troubling pattern. Local authorities have crucial information but lack systems to connect cases across jurisdictions, enabling potential serial killers to operate across state lines. Meanwhile, Jiri hires Detective Rolly Tabor, who discovers Verno had been arrested for attempted assault in 2001, with Bannock as the unnamed victim. Verno had painted Bannock's house and claimed he wasn't paid $2,800. The climax unfolds as Bannock's plans begin to unravel. At the Bayview Motel, Lacey arrives for what she believes is a meeting with Jiri, bringing her ex-military brother Gunther for protection. When Bannock attacks with a knife, Gunther intervenes. Their struggle leaves both men bloodied before Bannock escapes. Meanwhile, teenage cousins Marcus and Tyler, riding ATVs through private property, discover the remote cabin where Bannock has imprisoned Jiri. They find her dehydrated but alive, handcuffed to a metal bed frame. Their 911 call brings a swift, multi-jurisdictional response. For his final gambit, Bannock checks into an exclusive rehabilitation facility in Santa Fe using his Thomas Whitmore alias. In his private suite, he methodically executes his last plan, creating a potent acid mixture while ingesting lethal painkillers. He submerges his fingers in the caustic solution, ensuring even death won't reveal his fingerprints. His final package to his secretary contains an updated will, leaving her his entire $4.2 million estate with instructions for immediate cremation without autopsy. Just when it seems Bannock has escaped justice, even in death, Jiri makes a breakthrough. She tracks down Bannock's truck from the Verno murder, a 2009 Chevy Silverado that was sold, later totaled, and ended up at a salvage yard outside Milton, Florida. At Dusty Salvage, amid towers of crushed cars, Lacey, Jiri, and Darren search the wrecked truck. Though most of the interior is destroyed, Darren notices the intact glove compartment. Inside, they find an owner's manual, maintenance receipts, and, crucially, a State Farm insurance card issued to one of Bannock's front companies. The FBI laboratory subjects the insurance card to advanced fingerprint analysis. Technicians discover two pristine thumbprints matching a partial print from Leonard Verno's kitchen counter 20 years earlier, providing the definitive link that had eluded investigators for two decades. The judge's list meditates on obsession, how it destroys lives while driving remarkable achievements. Bannock's methodical obsession with revenge made him a calculating killer. Jiri's equally powerful obsession with uncovering her father's killer became her life's mission. Meanwhile, Lacey finds herself drawn into an investigation that reignites her purpose. The resolution brings mixed vindication and loss. Jiri's conviction is finally validated. Her instincts about Bannock were correct. Yet his suicide denies victims' families the satisfaction of a traditional legal resolution. Instead of seeing Bannock face judgment in court, they must find peace in exposed truth and the end of his killing spree. For Lacey, the case catalyzes personal transformation. The final beachside chapel scene symbolizes her liberation from professional stagnation. Her proposal to quit her job and take an extended honeymoon marks a decisive break from her previously cautious approach to life. Sometimes, the greatest victory lies not in punishment, but in releasing a long-carried obsession. Justice manifests unexpectedly, and truth, even without expected satisfaction, can provide freedom to move forward.